that kind of snooty cocktail attitude might work in some bars, but it's not going to work in a neighborhood zone like Newtown. So there's no need to be rude or like arrogant or think you know more than the customer when it comes to like some obscure whiskey. Be cool and engaging, and people respond.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Drinking establishments, great cocktail bars, dive bars, and wine bars have all been able to proliferate in Sydney's nightlife over the last two decades. But for those running them, how do you create a venue time and time again that delivers incredible drinks and eating experiences and gets the crowds in all the time too? Pasan Wijesena is the owner of Earl's Duke Joint, Jacoby's Tiki Bar, the Magpie, and the Trocadero Room. Pasan, how are you?
Good, thanks, Huck. How are you doing?
Good. I've managed to get all of those out. You've got a lot of venues. You're a busy guy. How are things at the moment?
Yeah, keeping busy. There's never a dull moment, as they say.
You've got four venues now. What's it like running multiple venues that are sort of so different to each other?
Look, creatively, it's fun. Obviously, logistically, there's challenges, but like all things, it comes down to having great teams around you. And I've been lucky to have great teams at every venue that allow me to indulge my crazy ideas to do other things. So, you know, that definitely helps.
You were sort of amongst the throng of new operators that really brought Sydney to life with speakeasies and cocktail bars that they hadn't really experienced before. What was that period of time like for you at the beginning of Earl's?
Super inspirational, honestly. Even going back before Earl's, like when it first started at Shady Pines, just that kind of ground zero of something new felt really inspiring. And there was, you know, a bunch of really talented people in the room. You know, go back to that Shady Pines team. Like, I think out of that, you've got maybe another 10 venues that opened up as a result of the crew that worked in there. So, you know, super inspirational, and everyone was top of their game, wanting to be better. We felt like we were doing something new for Sydney, at least anyway. So yeah, super exciting. And that kind of fed into Earl's, you know, for me, at least anyway. I'm sure Alex and Jeremy say something similar for their venue, but coming out of something as hyped as Shady Pines kind of created a bit of a runway for us. And having that, you know, Jason and Anton as great mentors was important, and I guess it sets its own set of challenges to have the pressure to live up to. It definitely is something you'd rather have than not as a new operator.
Were there challenges to begin with the Earls, given that these sort of venues were quite new for Sydney? I mean, for those that have travelled, they'd be familiar with them in big cities around the world. But was it hard with the clientele and sort of getting what you wanted to do right?
I think the clientele were really eager for it. I mean, I know I'd lived in Inner West Newtown for a while, and I was constantly travelling to Darlinghurst and Surry Hills to work. So that's kind of like why the conversation started about opening up a bar in Newtown. Was like, well, why isn't there a bar in Newtown? I'd like one. Maybe some other friends might like it too. So it kind of like came with a point of selfishness almost. Like, yeah, I live here. I'd like some stuff here too. And, you know, like Mary's, I think, had just opened. There was a few things starting to bubble around here. Continental Deli followed pretty soon after. Like I said, like little things popped up. And I mean, as a resident, I think we definitely wanted stuff here. The challenges are probably more at a like council and police level, and you know, getting those kind of ideas of what this venue was through, getting landlords to kind of understand what was happening was, you know, challenging. And I think a lot of the successful venues had good relationships with their landlords to kind of help things along.
It's Earl's is in an iconic site with an old butcher shop. How did you land on the location?
I mean, it was actually one of the first sites we saw. It was up for lease. It was through the same agent that had handled Shady Pines. So they kind of gave us the lowdown and the scoop on it. So we had a look at it. Quite liked it, but then it was the first site I'd seen, so we didn't want to kind of pull the trigger straight away. So we looked around a few more months. And then that Earl site was still available. And they'd actually dropped the rent because nobody was biting. So we're like, all right, that seems like a good sign for us. Let's take it. And my landlords are actually the grandkids of the original butchers. So they're the first tenants in here. We're the second tenant over the course of, I think it's 70 years, basically.
Keeping that facade of the butcher, was that always the intention?
Pretty much, man. Like, I think it was just such an iconic shop front. If you lived in the area, there's certain facades that just are landmarks. And, you know, I don't think you could pay anyone to design something cooler than that. And we also had no money. So it was kind of like, you know, two things in one. To do anything much cooler than what was already there. So we just thought, really wasn't trying to be a hidden bar. It just ended up being that. But, you know, I think previously most of the venues that I worked in were sort of subterranean, whereas this has got a window to the street. So I kind of like that connection to the local area.
Well, I want to explore Jacoby's and the new venues as well, the Magpie and the Trocadero Room. But take us back to when you were young. Whereabouts did you grow up and what sort of role did food play for you?
So I grew up in Northwest, like Castle Hill, Cherrybrook kind of area, Sri Lankan family. So I think like most people with ethnic backgrounds, food plays a pretty big role, you know, whether it's celebratory or milestones. And there's a tradition of, you know, recipes passed down from grandparents to parents, etc. So, you know, for us, like a celebration, there's always way too much food. And, you know, drinks involved as well, but definitely food is a big touchstone for us. And for me, it's like a connection, I guess, to my family's roots. So I didn't actually grow up in Sri Lanka, but my connection is through food.
Yeah. Tell us about one of the big feasts that you had with your family, the sort of food that was on offer and what happened?
Look, it varies, but like big party might be, you know, hoppers or dosa or something like that. But very typically it's rice and curry. And one of our sort of like family favorites, I'm not even sure how it came about. It might've been from necessity or invention, but like cheese waffles and chicken curry.
Wow.
So it seems like a really odd combination, but actually works really well. And to this day, it's still a family favorite. Like, every time we go to my mum's house, everyone's like, can we get cheese waffles and chicken curry?
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, so it's pretty stodgy but very satisfying kind of comfort food. Chicken curry has a good story too. My dad's mum had a recipe that was his favorite. So one day my mum was like, look, can you know, teach me this chicken curry recipe so I can make it for your son? And so my grandma would... In her the way was like, you know, nothing was written down. It's all just spoken. Telling my mom how to make it. But my mom claims that it was never quite the same as grandma's. That's because she was basically purposely not telling her the full recipe. So she'd still be number one. So my mom just pinned it down one day and watched her make it. And was like, all right, that's what's different. And ever since then, that recipe's been a family favorite, essentially.
When did you sort of get your foot in the door for hospitality? What was the lure for you to carve out a career in that industry?
I mean, I went to uni, did IT as a sort of first job out of university. Was kind of plodding along, not really enjoying it. I was like, well, I might just do some bar work at night times just to mix things up a little bit and just have a bit of fun while I'm doing my day job. Worked at the Argyle Street Hotel in Parramatta, which was...
I remember that.
Yeah. So I think that's now been replaced by a train station, essentially. But that was my first bar job, wiping out ashtrays and selling three packs of Tui's New from the bottle shop. That then led into working for some sort of gastropub-style venues, which was quite big at that time. Did that sort of for about 3 years, and then during that process decided to quit my day job to just do that full time. I got offered a management job at the pub. Was pretty nervous about telling my parents that I was going to do that, but they were actually really cool about it. And I think they probably thought I was going to do it for a while and then get back to a more serious job. But little did they know that it would actually lead me down a path of, you know, about 20 years of hospitality work. Kind of like jumped from a few different venues, worked at Ruby Rabbit back in those days, which is where I met Anton. He was working downstairs, I was working upstairs. pardon me. Then I went with those guys to set up what was Ox Art Factory, became part of that OG crew there. And during the course of working at Ox Art Factory with Jason and Anton, that's kind of when that small bar licensing sort of came into effect. They found a site around the corner and, you know, took me on board to help them start that. None of us thought it would be as big as it was. I'm sure, like, they'd be the first to tell you, like, trying to open up a country and western whiskey bar at that time was like, you know, maybe we might need two or three staff, and, you know, we weren't expecting it to be busy, not the way it was. And then, yeah, a couple of years into that, Jason was like, look, I think you need to do your own thing, and, you know, Newtown, why don't you do Newtown? So that was kind of the path of it, really.
But take us back to Shady Pines. It is a very unique venue, but it always seems to be full and hard to get in the door. Do you have any stories of what it was like sort of being part of the creation and the energy of that in the early years?
Yeah, I mean, I, funnily enough, I'm showing my age, but I remember buying records when it was a record store prior to being a Shady Pines. You know, I still have actually some 12 inches from there. But yeah, just... the room has grown kind of organically, and just being part of something that was kind of new and different, I think, was super vibrant, and just there's a buzz in the room pretty much every time you walked in the door. I think it's a pretty unique room. You walk down the stairs without any kind of expectation of what's behind the doors. You can be blown away pretty well by just what's in front of you. Just like a onslaught for the senses, I think. And then, yeah, just having, you know, that level of crew that worked there, you would never, it just became like a hospitality hotspot, a spot for people to stop in on the way after work on their breaks. Pretty quickly, it was like a hospo favorite, I'd say. You know, a bunch of the chefs from Mark down the road would come in on their break. So it was a real mixture of bartenders, chefs, journalists, artists, musos, you know, kind of like the perfect melting pot of a crowd.
You mentioned that you wanted a bar in sort of your local neighborhood with Newtown, and there wasn't really anything there at the time. Well, what surprised you about creating your own venue and going down that path on your own?
I mean, day one, when you see people that you don't know walking in the door, that's always really cool. And you're like, how do you know about this place? Like, what are you doing here? Like, you know, that still blows my mind. Like, when you open a new venue and people you don't know are walking in or have been looking forward to it opening, you know, that's super humbling and really cool. But I guess just the way people picked it up, like, you know, Newtown had plenty of pubs and still has some really good ones. But at the time, there wasn't really much of a cocktail scene. I mean, we definitely had, like, Coletto's down the other end of the street, which was, like, you know, that was around when I was at uni even. But not really known for the best drinks in town. Yeah, I think mostly people are just ready for that different type of service, that different level of attention, quality of drinks.
You went in a different direction with a tiki bar a couple of years later. How did that come about?
We always had a couple of tropical tiki style drinks on the menu at Earl's. So it was kind of a way to just flesh that out. And I had a couple of regulars of mine who drank at Earl's who were really into tiki. And they're like, look, if you ever want to do a tiki bar, let us know. And we're kind of like, yeah, yeah, sure. And a couple of years later, a few spaces started popping up in Emerald Road. And we were like, look, maybe that's a good spot for a tiki bar. So we started toying around with some ideas. Again, the Dr. Jacoby from Twin Peaks idea was kind of like our working title as a dumb idea for it. And then they were like, oh, maybe that actually is the idea. So that kind of came pretty naturally as well, from a point of kind of a joke, really. But then it's like, oh, maybe this is a really cool angle for us to try and push.
COVID, as we were talking to lots of guests, had an impact on many businesses in the hospitality sector. But when you're a cocktail bar, what sort of challenges did you face, and did it change sort of what you do?
100%. I mean, literally the main way you make money is now shut off, right? So you can't open the doors. People aren't allowed inside. I was aware of a few things in the pipeline just through my advocacy work with the Independent Bar Association. So that was something that was kind of, you know, ticking along in the background, but it really didn't pick up steam until COVID happened, because it gave us kind of a focus of something to aim for and, you know, a reason for kind of existing. So pretty quickly we were aware of like the takeaway drinks angle, and, you know, other sort of financial aid that was going to come down the pipeline. So trying to use my position in that role to sort of just cascade that information down everyone, just to sort of calm nerves down a bit, but also give people a heads up to, look, if you can do takeaway, try and do that, buy some gear, try and do it. It may not be the same as being open, but it'll at least give you some sort of sense of income and your staff something to do. So for us, it was really important. Like, it basically kept the whole team intact through that period, gave them some stuff to do that I could actually pay them for. It generated some income to pay them and pay suppliers. Kept us engaged with the local audience, I think, was probably the most important part of doing that. Because I think COVID kind of really emphasized people's connection to their local areas. So if they were working from home, they could still walk down the street and grab a coffee from the local cafe or get a takeaway margarita from the bar. So it really strengthened local bonds and sense of community, which are ultimately what these kind of venues are about, I think.
Did it change the way you focus on your business or the structure of your businesses?
Yeah, I mean, I think pretty quickly we all became much more business savvy. You know, like, I don't think you could ever accuse bartenders of being the best business people, but like, and that probably goes for chefs too, I imagine. But pretty quickly we all became very familiar with our accountants and bookkeepers and various items on the balance sheets. And, you know, I know personally for myself, I became much better at running my business from a just straight up business point of view. And it, you know, it took something like annihilation by COVID to like to make us be like that. But yeah, as creatives, it's probably not the first thing you want to do, but obviously it's important to sustaining your business.
Well, you've not only survived, but you've thrived, and you've got a couple of new venues as well. Tell us about the ideas behind them and how they came about.
Chocolatero Room is basically the space next to Jacoby's. It was previously trading as another venue. We weren't actively thinking about taking it on until it closed, and the landlords who we were familiar with approached us and said, look, would you guys like to take it on? We looked at it with sort of half an eye towards what was happening in the district at a bigger level, which was the entertainment precinct of Enmore Road. So we're like, potentially a good move for us to get an entertainment venue in that space to take advantage of the various concessions and allowances with that district. Aside from that, it was just something that, again, a type of venue that doesn't exist much anymore. There are sort of some big venues, big clubs, but nothing at a smaller level that can, you know, foster some local scenes, give you something to do on a Tuesday night. You know, like, I think the big battle for hostel operators is getting people out of the house, get them off the couch, don't order delivery stuff, go to a restaurant, go support some local stuff. Otherwise, it won't exist in 10 years. It'll just be big chains. So that's really important. I think that was kind of like the driving force for trying to do Trocadero. And then, you know, the space next to it was also there. That again was half a joke of like, we should do a sports bar. I think there's a pattern forming of all the good ideas starting as jokes. But you know, like, we're like, what if we did this and this and this? And it's actually the most simple venue that I've opened, but it's really resonating with people. People will just walk past and it's very familiar and nostalgic, and you know what's going to happen in there. There's sports on TV, there's beer. It's like a local's living room, essentially, you know, for want of a better word. And it's just, yeah, you're going to meet someone you know pretty much anytime you walk in there.
And it's arguably the smallest sports bar in the country.
We're definitely claiming it. So we've proven otherwise. I think there's a bar in central Queensland that might beat us to that. But like, I think we're certainly claiming Sydney's smallest pub.
How do you, you know, food is such a big hook for people these days as well. With such different venues, how do you run a food program as well to sort of please people's appetite in that sense?
I mean, we typically just work with neighbouring businesses. So, you know, Earls, we partnered with Bloodwood. So they, as a customer, you can place an order at the bar and Bloodwood sends the food over. Helps us kind of work with each other rather than being a competition as well. Jacoby's, we work with, you know, a local pizza shop, Magpie and Trocadero. It's pizza and chicken, which is literally shops that are two doors down from us. So that's a nice way of just engaging neighbors, build that community aspect as well. Occasionally we do pop-ups with friends who are chefs. So, you know, we've done one at Earl's. Most recently was with Babs, Ellie, and Beck. We did one with Paul Carmichael previous to that. Again, just friends who just want to work with us. So it's kind of like happened pretty organically without too much thought.
Does it have its challenges, given that you sort of, although you're working together with other businesses, you're also relying on them to deliver an experience in your venues? Are there challenges with it?
I think you're just going to be careful how you offer the product and what it is you're offering. So if you're at Earl's, for example, you're probably not going to get a full sit-down meal with knife and fork type thing. It'll be pretty casual type affair. And it's really just something to give you sustenance for drinking, essentially, you know. Whereas we're doing a more serious pop-up with someone who's a chef friend, that will probably run as its own separate event, essentially. So that might be a one-off thing that's quite different to what we normally offer, but it will be quite food-focused. We are working with Ellie and the Babs crew to do something for the Magpie eventually. So that might be a bit more of a long-term partnership. But that's just getting through the opening teething problems and logistics before you work out how exactly we do it.
Enmore Road has really changed so dramatically over the last decade. Tell us a little bit about sort of what's going on there and what's sort of lured you to be such a big part of it.
I mean, Jacoby's is now 7 years in, so when we first opened there, there really wasn't much other than a couple of restaurants and pubs. But I think Enmore Road works as a district because it naturally kind of formed. And having the theatre at the heart, and then I guess you got the Factory Theatre on the other side, and the breweries kind of sprinkled amongst it all, it kind of created a natural hub for stuff. You know, whenever there's a show on, there's an extra 2,000 people in the area. So they all want to go eat and drink somewhere. I'm always in favor of like districts that kind of form organically. And predominantly they're all operated by people who live either locally or very close. So most businesses have a pretty strong connection to the neighborhood. Kind of works because of that.
The strength of your venues is the incredible drinks offerings that you have at the different venues. And you've also got, you know, amazing, you're renowned for your cocktail making prowess. What makes a great cocktail, and do you have a favorite that you like to make?
I mean, these days I'm pretty simple. I like a gin and tonic, I like a Negroni. They're pretty basic. I think most bartenders who work in cocktails stick far away from cocktails when they're on their breaks. But I think it's all about balance. Best drinks are always nice and balanced. But I think it's also the hospitality part of it. Like I was saying, that if people love you, you can basically serve them a glass of mud and they'll love it, you know. It's more like the drinks side of things is like 10% of the job. The rest of it, I think, is you're in the art of selling hospitality, and it's being a host, being a whatever, tour guide, counselor, like all these other things. So I think the drinks part of it is just almost one of the smallest parts.
Your venues are renowned for sometimes being hard to get into, really popular. What is it that you tell your team, and, you know, what's the ethos of the business sort of to create such great venues?
Just be nice. You know, like, I think there's this like, or there was at least anyway, this impression of cocktail bars being really snooty and, you know, hard to get into, and, you know, you've got to really impress the bartender almost by your drink order. I think that was a model we threw out the window, and it just, that was, you know, a big part of opening up in a neighborhood kind of high street was, look, that kind of snooty cocktail attitude might work in some bars, but it's not going to work in a neighborhood zone like Newtown. And I don't personally like it anywhere as a punter. So there's no need to be rude or like arrogant or think you know more than the customer when it comes to like some obscure whiskey. Just be cool and engaging, and people respond.
Well, you've got four venues now in Newtown. You're almost the mayor of Newtown. Do you have any plans to branch out, or do you just see yourself sort of embedding in the Newtown area?
Yeah, I like to make life easy for myself so I can kind of walk between all the venues, but look, I think Inner West is, or well, this part of town anyway, is probably reaching critical mass for bars, at least anyway. So I'm invariably, if we have to do something else, it'll probably be outside of Newtown. I don't think we'll venture too far. We probably stick close to areas that we know and we have connections to. So it'd be between here and Redfern and, you know, Chippendale, these kind of areas. So.
You almost had a long career in IT, but changed track and moved into the bar scene and hospitality. How much has it changed you, the couple of decades that you've been in hospitality?
That might be a question for someone else, I think. But I like to think I've not changed too much, but I guess you've got to just keep up to date with what's going on in the industry. I would say the industry as a whole has gotten better to work in. There's definitely issues with these kind of jobs, and historically there's not been the best place to work at, like as an employee, for various reasons. I think a lot of those kind of issues have been addressed over the course of the last few years. Not to say it's perfect still, but at least, you know, like things like wage theft and representation, you know, just sexual assault, like all these issues that are like through the industry, drug abuse, all that's a lot better. You know, 10 years ago, you probably would find a handful of bartenders that did yoga or went to the gym. And now it's kind of the norm, you know. People are aware that you can't drink every day of the week. You got to have breaks. You know, and getting paid properly, like these are like things that are important. And I think, as bartenders who are now owners of businesses, and this probably goes the same for chefs too, if you own a business, I think it's your job to make it better than what it was when you came in. So hopefully we've done that, or at least tried to.
Well, you've created some amazing businesses, iconic businesses in Newtown. What do you love about what you do?
It's fun. Yeah, you get to be creative for a living. It's social. I think having that COVID break really emphasized why you like to do this job. and certainly not to make a lot of money, because I don't think, you know, anyone in this position is making a ton of money, but it kind of, you do it because you love to do it.
Well, Fazan, it's an absolute honor to have you on Deep in the Weeds today to hear a bit of your story, and congrats on the new venues, and look forward to seeing what comes in the future as well. Please keep in touch and we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, Huck. Appreciate it. I'm a big fan of the podcast.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.